Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, man. I'm recording, by the way.
Great.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is the Life Autistic Podcast with your host, Ryan Summers. With me, as always, is my producer and friend, Drew Skitt. Hey, Drew, how are you today?
I'm confused as to how I should be speaking right now.
Well, I think you sound just wonderful.
Check one, two.
Drew seems to be having some technical difficulties, and he keeps getting tossed out of the conversation. We are today going to be speaking with Armani Williams is going to be on the show today. Now, he is a young man from Michigan. I believe he's 20 years old. He is a race car driver who is also openly autistic. And we are very excited to speak with him today. So, here we go. There he is. He's coming in. Armani Williams is here. Woo! Hello.
Hello.
Yes, there he is. Armani, welcome.
Hey, Mr. Summers. Hey, Mr. Skitt. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We're just, I'm Ryan. That's right. Drew, whichever way he is on your screen.
Yeah, am I right? I see him.
Drew's having a bit of technical difficulties today. He keeps getting sort of tossed out of the call, but coming back in. So don't be alarmed by that. But
as long as you guys can hear each other, that's the most important thing.
Well, dude.
Yeah, I can hear him fine.
Welcome to the Life Autistic Podcast, my friend. I got to tell you, we're super excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I'm excited as well.
Right on. That's very cool. Do you want to just maybe start with just introducing yourself and telling, you know, the 7 or 8 people who watch this a little bit who you are, a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so, you know, name's Armani Williams. I am 20 years old from Grosse Pointe, Michigan. I was, you know, diagnosed with autism, and I am a professional race car driver. You know, I mean, at least growing up with autism, you know, it was always challenging. You know, like as a kid, I was always, you're sort of like a shy guy from, you know, if you ever play those Mario games or whatever, I was kind of like the shy guy type person that never really talked a lot, never really did a lot of things. You know, I think, you know, over time, you know, I started develop a liking for cars. You know, I would have a collection of Hot Wheels or Matchbox type cars. Played them on the kitchen counter, whether it was at my grandparents or at my parents' house. You know, I just really loved cars in general. And, you know, and then I heard something called NASCAR. And, you know, when I heard a NASCAR, I'm like, this NASCAR thing sounds pretty cool. I got to check this out. And, you know, they would play them on TV during the weekend, mostly on Sundays. And the first time I ever watched it, you know, it really fascinated me right away. You know, I did not want to watch anything else. I just wanted to see those cars, just seeing how fast those cars are going and just how cool the cars looked with the style and the paint schemes and all that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it came to a point where I loved it so much that, you know, I one day told my dad that, hey, this is something that I want to do. I want to be a professional race car driver. I want to do what those guys were doing. And so, you know, by the time I was 8 years old, that's where my racing career kind of started, you know, racing in, you know, go-karts, which is, you know, mostly where you would say like a lot of race car drivers would get started. And those go-karts, you know, if you go to those amusement park attractions, they have a go-kart. And, you know, I did that first. And then, you know, moved my way up and drove these cars for what they call mini cups. And if you ever seen like a regular car, like the one I drove was sort of like a half size version of them. You know, it was a little bigger, a little more faster, and had some great success there. And then, you know, then I started going more into the professional level by the time I was 15 or 16 years old. Racing a truck, and it was called the ARCA Truck Pro Series, and I would race mostly in the Midwest here in Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, things of that nature, and you know, had some good success there. And then eventually I was invited to be at this program down in Florida called the NASCAR Driver Diversity Program, where you know, they invite certain drivers of, you know, me as an African-American, female drivers, or you know, drivers that are not even from the United States, they're probably from Mexico or somewhere else, you know, just kind of give them an opportunity to kind of help them uplift their career so that they can continue to move down the ladder towards their dream.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't get chosen to drive one of their cars. Like, it was a guy named Max Siegel. He was sort of the guy who, he's a owner of a, race team called I'm trying to remember the name, you know, like he has his own race team, you know, and he had an opportunity to drive one of his cars if you did well like in the program. And I didn't, but you know, NASCAR saw the potential that I had in me, and it was that type of exposure that I needed, because now they gave me an opportunity to go to get up to NASCAR. But the fascinating thing is that I ultimately raced in another NASCAR series up in Canada. You know, they had a pro series race, racing up there in what's called the NASCAR Pinty Series, where I had an opportunity to race against some of the best Canadian drivers in the world, you know, and it really helped me learn just of, you know, how these pro drivers race, you know, and that I can continue to develop the skills and learn a lot to do what it takes to be a better race car driver.
Yeah.
You know, and then came back to race NASCAR in the US and, you know, made a few starts in what was now called the K&N series. You know, they had two divisions of what was the West and the East series, and I did both. And now I'm in what is the ARCA Menards series, you know, and I made my first start last year. I made a couple starts last year. One of what was in Phoenix in last March. And then I was fortunately able to race at the hometown track over at Michigan International Speedway too, where I got my first top 10 in the ARCA Menards series. So that was quite
nice, bro.
And
that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, I mean, of all the big races in the world, whenever you can do well at a hometown track, wherever you come from, you know, there's always something exciting or special to it as well, you know? So to be able to do that was pretty exciting. And, you know, hopefully looking to do more this year and continue to move up through the ranks, you know, ultimately I want to make it into one of the top three levels of NASCAR, where they got the NASCAR Camper World Truck Series, the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and then the top level of the sport is the NASCAR Cup Series. You know, I want to get into the top three first, and then hopefully get to a point where I can reach that, you know, ultimate goal, moving to the very top of the NASCAR Cup Series, and to be able to develop a, you know, more successful career, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Oh man. That is like, your story blows my mind. I just love everything about you and about it. And I feel like, oh, I have like 20 different things I want to ask you right now. So I'm trying to organize myself and just let it sort of figure out. I'll start with just one of the things that got me so excited to talk to you is I grew up in a racing family. So my mom and dad were both car racers. So in Ontario, Canada, so not far from Michigan, you know, we're just across the bridge basically. So when I was a kid, I have two brothers, and we would, when we were growing up, I mean, our weekends were spent, you know, in the driving somewhere in a motorhome with a trailer on the back with, you know, my dad's race car on it. Like, I remember he was racing Formula 4 and Formula 2000. So like open wheel racing, but we would, that was how we grew up in the, as a kid in the summers, is weekends at the track. Some tracks that you may have heard of around here, like Mosport, Shannonville, other tracks. This is, you know, I mean, before you were born, but I'm old, as you can see with the gray, but
those tracks have seen some miles since then.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then my mom was one of the first female race car drivers. We still have like newspaper clippings from the 60s and 70s with featuring her as like, you know, the first female race car driver in the area, standing there in her, you know, her racing suit on, like, you know, leaning on the car where they're holding her helmet, like looking like a cool badass lady.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Yeah. And then her brothers all raced. She had three brothers. They all raced. So it's actually like how my parents met, is in the racing community, which is, you know, really cool. And then when we were kids, my brothers and I, like and I'm sorry I'm being so long winded, but we all were into go-karting as well, which is as people who are listening who may not be familiar with racing, as Armani mentioned earlier, like a lot of kids who are interested in racing, that's kind of your early entry into the sport is through go-karting. So we did a lot of that. I didn't end up racing like both my brothers did. I loved driving the cart when we would practice on like an empty track or in parking lots and things like that. But the idea of being on a track with other people freaked me out a little bit because, you know, not knowing now, like I didn't know then that I was, am autistic. I was diagnosed recently in my 40s. So I'm so curious about so many things about you. Cause I'm just like,
me too.
It's just amazing. So I'm really happy to talk to you. And I, now that I've just spewed my mouth, I don't actually know what my next question is, but you are open about being autistic in the racing world, which is really cool. And I guess the first obvious question is like, how have racing and autism, like how do they interact in your brain and in your life? How do they work together?
I think, you know, with the racing and autism thing, you know, I mean, I think with being autistic, you know, I mean, we kind of have this ability to where, you know, we can always focus and concentrate on certain things that we like and enjoy, you know, and I think for my sake, you know, cars and racing, you know, just sort of came in my DNA, you know, it was just sort of something that I really enjoy. And, you know, no matter what other things were going on around me, you know, racing was the only thing that I could think about. And so, you know, I mean, I think it's just, you know, you start, you know, wanting to learn more about something you enjoy, and then you kind of want to try and get involved with it as much as you can. And so, you know, I mean, I think really, you know, by the time, you know, I got started with racing, you know, there was always the concern of not only with like, how am I going to race people around me, but like, it's also the speeds too. I mean, you know, you think about it, like in racing, like, especially in the bigger levels, they're going like 180, 190 miles an hour. Now you try to drive your road cart on the highway. That sounds dangerous though, but like on a racetrack though, but like, you know, it's just something that I knew that I had to get used to. And I think with me, I just always like to be fast in something, you know. I never wanted to try and do something in a slow way. I always like to do something fast, like just go quick, go as fast as I can. And, you know, every time I'm in a race car, you know, strapping into that helmet, turning that engine on and, you know, ready to go out on the track, you know, it, I sort of see me being in the race car as sort of my comfort zone, you know. It's just the passion that I just draw into it, you know, and really like things move so fast on the racetrack that, you know, that kind of level of focus and concentration is something that you have to have. You got to know your surroundings and what's happening. You know? So every time I'm in a race car, you know, everything that I may be thinking about that's not related to what I'm about to do, you know, all that gets completely shut down. And all I'm worried about is just going out there, driving as hard as I can, driving as fast as I can. And hopefully by the end of the day, you know, we can finish where we need to finish at the end.
That's really cool. I think about like I remember just going back to being a kid in a go-kart, and we'd go to this big, huge parking lot at this college on a Sunday because there'd be nobody there. It'd be empty. And my dad and like a couple of his buddies, my brothers would be there with go-karts, and they'd set out pylons and create a track on this parking lot. And we would just go around and around. And I think about like that hyper-focus of the brain to like each corner, like see the line and take the line. And then, you know, exactly, you kind of know next time you come to that same corner, you got to go a little bit earlier, or a little bit later, or break a little later, or just like, you're kind of get this hyper-focus of just always looking for like microscopic improvements in the way you took each corner. Excuse me. And I can see how that could be like just such a great feeling to do that professionally, and like do that, and how like utilizing like your brain to just like go fast and do that and have that hyper focus. I mean, it just sounds, I'm like, I wish I was doing it.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned that as well. And I forgot to point that out too, you know, even with that focus and concentration, you know, you got to take each racetrack as knowing that, you know, sometimes you're going to have to drive it as differently as other tracks. So like you mentioned of, you know, where you have to lift all the gas, where you have to brake, where you have to get off the gas, the corners, you know, like the corners is where, you know, it's the difference between, you know, beating somebody off the corner or down the straightaway and losing it as well, you know. So it's just trying to memorize of just where exactly you need to like point out in each racetrack of like, you know, where you have to brake, you know, where you have to get on the gas, when it's the best time to try and turn in, you know? And so those things are important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, did you, when you were a kid, I mean, in this, we're going to get into a little bit of the ableism conversation, I guess. But like when you were a kid and you said, hey, I love this thing, this is what I want to do, were you met with any resistance from, you know, family, friends, like community of like, no, son, like you can't do that. That's not for you kind of thing. Or were people really supportive from the beginning?
I think, you know, like throughout my life, you know, I mean, I'm kind of grateful to have the kind of support system I have from my family. I mean, I think like by the time I was diagnosed with autism, you know, they knew it was going to be a challenge for me. And no, I felt like no matter what I did, my parents were going to support me no matter what. And so, you know, when it came time to, you know, when I told my dad that I wanted to be a race car driver, and you know, with racing, there was a time where, you know, racing was viewed as a dangerous sport, is yeah. where like those drivers go out there and you never know if it's going to be their last race because, you know,
yeah.
So unfortunately something bad could happen to them and you don't wish it upon them. And so, you know, they could have told me, you know, hey, I mean, racing is not for you. You should try yeah. something else. But they kind of understood early on that, you know, cars and racing was something that I loved and that, you know, if I ever decided that, you know, that's something that I wanted to do in my life, that my yeah. they were going to support me. They were going to do everything in their power to help me to achieve the dream that I wanted to achieve no yeah. matter what, you know, and still that's to this awesome. Day, you know, they still support me. They still, you know, we've gone on this long journey ever since I started racing at yeah. 8 years old. And, you know, continue to work hard, like at least being a professional race car driver, you yeah. know, at least I've accomplished that. You know, we're always striving to try and do more and just try to continue yeah. on this journey, continue my racing career, you know, because that's yeah. just something that I love. And, yeah. you know, they understand that. And, you know, I'm just very grateful of the type of support system I have. You know, I mean,
yeah.
in racing, you know, you can never get in by yourself. You know, it's no. totally impossible mm-hmm. to try and do everything by yourself. You just don't see that a lot today. You got to have people that believe that, you know, you can do a certain thing and that they're willing yeah. to have your back no matter what. And that's yeah. just something that I have for a long time. And, you know, it's definitely important.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, you made me think there, but yeah, the dangers of it and the perceived dangers of racing. I mean, autistic or not, even just non-autistic kids, I could see a lot of families being like, no, no, we don't want you doing that because that's just, it's a dangerous sport. I mean, less, you know, it gets safer all the time, but I mean, there's a history of, I mean, and no matter how safe you make it, it's still more dangerous than playing soccer, you know? So I yeah. can see how parents, like, you know, even with the kids who are, you know, not autistic, like could still be like, no, no, honey, we don't want you doing that. Like, you know,
absolutely.
Like I just, every mom's nightmare is their child going, hey, I want to be a race car driver, you know?
Yeah. Sounds like you had like a very, very supportive environment growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's just something that, you know, you have to have, you know, like, you know, as much as you want to do a certain thing, you know, you want to have people that, you know, support you and believe that, you know, you can achieve something in life as well. And that they're willing to help you every step of the way. You know, that's very important.
Yeah.
And could it be that autism and driving go together in some way? Like the danger, like high level performance component of what you do, like does having autism, like it's hard to, because how would you know the difference? But do you think it's actually like it could be an advantage to you?
I definitely think it can be an advantage. You know, I think, you know, with racing, there's always a challenge and a certain skill that you have to have with, you know, driving. You know, I mean, yeah. requires, you know, you have certain techniques of just, you know, how you like, I mean, again, just like how you approach the track, you know, kind of pinpoint where to lift, where to brake, where to get off the gas. And, you know, living a life with autism is also a challenge. So I think, you know, the combination of the challenges that you have to have early on with having autism and then the challenges that it takes yeah. on the track, you know, where requires a lot of skill behind the wheel. I think those things really match up together. And for yeah. whatever reason, yeah. I just kind of found it to fit and something yeah. that, you know, I needed to get involved in this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's funny because there's a lot of, excuse me. Sorry, guys. I've got something going on in the tickle in my throat today. So
it's all right.
There's a few different like Facebook groups I'm in for, you know, autistic people. And there's always lots of interesting conversations going on. And I've seen a few around driving and it seems to be, I mean, and I'll preface this by saying, you know, the famous quote, if you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person. We're not all the same. We're all different. But there can be some sort of general patterns that you can see. But it's funny because a lot of autistic people either don't drive or don't drive until later in life. Like, I didn't get my driver's license until I was 35, which is like, I was totally the black sheep of my family, of coming from a family of drivers and racers and motorcycle riders. And, you know, but it was, everyone was like, that's so weird. But I was terrified of driving my whole adult life. And then at 35, I got my license, and now I just love driving. Like, any excuse to get in the car, I'm like, I'm game for it, you know? Which is sort of funny to me. Like, if someone's like, oh, I need to go pick something up 12 hours away, I'm like, I'll go. Like, I just love, I love being in the car. So it's interesting that you just, like, you know, just at a very young age, just went, that thing, I want to do that thing. Like, that's awesome. That you gravitated towards it.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that.
and I was also excited to see when I was reading about you that, yeah, you, and you mentioned it earlier, you spent some time in Canada. You raced at Delaware, which is a track that I know because it's like very close to where I grew up. So again, like, we would go there on very often, sit in the stands and watch races. And, you know, either my dad was racing or some of his friends were racing. And how was your time up here in Canada? How'd you find it?
Oh, I don't think I had a much better time. You know, it's kind of fun when you can race in a different country that you're not even from, you know?
Yeah.
And then just sort of get to soak in the type of race environment that these Canadian fans, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, drawn into, you know, and they were some very nice people. You know, I had a great time, you know. You know, we would have autograph sessions, you know. I don't know if I've gained a little more fans in Canada, you know, than I did in the US. I mean, they were very friendly, you know. It made me feel welcome, just like as the only American in the, like, coming up in the series, just trying to get a head start, you know. And when I heard that, you know, I was going to make my first start in Delaware, you know, I tried not to think that, you know, that Delaware Speedway was actually in Delaware here in the U.S. No, it's not in the state of Delaware, in Canada, you know, so I had to make sure I get that right. But, you know, mainly I had a really good time. And, you know, like, Delaware Speedway was a fun track too,
yeah,
you know, cool. Good little short track. And, you know, you know, then had the best qualifying in the world, but the main thing was, you know, just to try and finish the race. And, you know, some cars had trouble, they wrecked out, like, they tried to win the race on the first lap, and, you know, we just kind of carved our way through, and I think we finished in, like, 13 or 12, but, like, from how our day was, you know, it was pretty good. And then, you know, along the way, it was just, you know, getting to learn, just getting that more seat time, you know, because, I mean, every race, you know, like, you're always learning something, you know, you always want to take some positives, but you also want to take some things of something that you want to improve, you know, that's mainly how you have to approach it, you know.
Yeah.
And then the next race, you know, just make sure you try to improve in what you're trying to improve, you know. So I think I only ran like a limited schedule up there in Canada, but you know, every race we went up to, you know, I had a really good time and had some great runs, you know, it really improved my racing skills. And, you know, I knew like how to race, like with a certain level of drivers. Like, I mean, these are professionals. So, you know, like you know, I had to step my game up, you know, and eventually, you know, it caught me and, you know, I was able to race with certain people.
Yeah.
Congrats, man. That's so cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
How does it work in racing? Like, as far as like mentorship and coaching goes, like, you know, obviously in any other, like in a, you know, basketball or football or something, you play for a team, there's a coach, there are several coaches, but in racing, like how, you know, when you got into it and your family got into it, did you have anyone in your family that had any connection to racing or knew anything about it? And in it, if so, how did that work? And if not, like, how did you guys figure out how to navigate that world and then get, you know, people helping and coaches and mentors and people to work with?
Yeah. So, to answer your one question, my family didn't actually come from a racing background, you know, like they had no connection to racing. Like the only thing I could say is, you know, one time my dad told me a story of how, like, in 2001, like, how he watched that Daytona 500, yeah. That race where, unfortunately and tragically, Dale Earnhardt was killed, you know? And so, like, it's not like my dad never, like, wasn't, like, he didn't came from a racing background, but, like, he kind of knew a little bit about racing because, you know, at one time, you know, NASCAR was pretty popular. So, I mean, I think, you know, by the time I got started racing, you know, like, it's just something we just had to kind of learn along the way. It's just, like, not only, like, what did I had to do on the track to, you know, move myself up the ladder racing, but what are the stuff off the track, you know, with like the business side, you know, we had to make a lot of connections with people that had more racing knowledge than we did, whether it was like people that owned the track or, you know, whether it was us trying to, you know, tell people like about our mission, our story with me being autistic and that, you know, is something unique and special that maybe people wanted to get on and try to like continue along the journey with us, you know? And so I think it's just more of just taking the initiative and just like tell certain people about our story, you know, and seeing if they're willing to help us along the way and, you know, us like continuing up the ladder, you know, and reaching that ultimate goal.
That was something I was going to ask you about too. Like navigating that world, because the world of racing, I mean, there's so much more to it than just what happens on the track. I mean, you obviously when you're behind the wheel, that's what everybody sees. And, but I mean, racing is, it's, I just know from, you know, growing up in that world and seeing it, it's a really expensive sport, and it's not, you know, it's like, again, like to compare it to like soccer, you just need a field and a ball and you're playing soccer. So with the barrier of entry to playing soccer is what, like $15 to buy a soccer ball and then you're in, you're playing. So, you know, and obviously like there's leagues and stuff when you're a kid and you're going to spend a little money on that. You got to get a uniform, whatever, but like racing is like, you know, it's a really expensive sport. And if you're going to get somebody to sponsor you and, you know, put you in the driver's seat, like they've really got to believe in you. They've got to trust you. They've got to believe that you can, do well and also like represent them or represent, you know, whoever. Like, do you find in the racing world, the people you encounter, whether it's, you know, the community or sponsors you're going after, things like that, have you found that world supportive, or have you had some struggles too, or people that I imagine some people see you and they go, hey, this is a great guy, a great story, like a good driver. Like we want to support this. And I imagine other people might be a little hesitant and go like, I'm not really sure.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, you know, when we tell people about my story and, you know, what we're really trying to, you know, accomplish, you know, they definitely see that as something that they want to support. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just seen like we're in a world now to where, you know, like in the world of racing, like it's not so much of let's try to find the best possible driver, you know, no matter what type of funding, you know, or what type of sponsor he brings to the table. Let's just get a driver who can drive this car. Yeah. Now it's kind of more of like, you know, hey, you need to have like a certain amount of funding, you know, or sponsorship, you know, you got to bring something to the table, you know, and if that you're not willing to have something on the table, then it's just like, as much as they want to support you, you know, there's nothing really else that they can do, you know, because they're, you know, they want to be more dependent on, you know, their business and, you know, what they're really trying to invest in. And that's the important thing, you know, is just to tell people what your mission is, what your story and what you're trying to do. And, you know, you gotta hope that, you know, that they see it and that they're willing to invest in what you're trying to do. And, you know, that way you can continue on and do some of the things that you need to do, you know, on the track to keep moving up down the ladder, you know, and just, continue to get that recognition, to let your name be put out so that people can recognize you and learn more about you, like we're doing today. And, you know, hopefully, you know, when that happens, that, you know, more opportunities will come at you, and that, you know, your will, and that, you know, whatever you're trying to look for, you're trying to struggle for, you know, you're finally given that chance, and that now you can show people what you can really do. And so, you know, that's really the important thing, you know, it's just being able to make those certain connections, you know, help people believe in your story and what you're trying to do. And hope that they can invest in what you're trying to do. So that way you can get more chances and opportunities.
Well, hey, Drew, like when we when our podcast blows up and we get like a big Spotify deal for like $100 million or something, I think we'll come back and we'll sponsor Armani, and we'll get the big Life Autistic podcast logo on the car.
I think Armani, Armani's business outline could help us move forward with some sponsorships. So thanks for the, you know, I think it's so, it's so critical to like understand what your brand is. And then, you know, it's sort of like once you're focused and you have your mission, then those that align come on board, and those that don't, don't. Like, what has the response been within the autistic like racing community for you, Armani?
Or are you the only one in the autistic racing community?
I'm sure there's more out there. You know, maybe it may not be in NASCAR, but it may be in other places. You know, I recently got a chance to get together with this team called EPRIN. You know, it's basically like a British sports car type of team where, you know, they kind of, you know, like they have a group of drivers that have certain disabilities, whether it's autism, whether there's people in a wheelchair or something, you know.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, there's a couple of autistic drivers probably in the sports car world, and then, you know, and also in other places. So, I mean, I think, you know, the response in the autistic community, they see it as inspiring. They see it as hope, and that, you know, they see that, you know, hey, man, they're like, this guy can accomplish his dream of being a professional race car driver. Then whatever dream we have, we can accomplish it as well. You know, I mean, all it takes is, you know, putting in the time and the commitment for what you love to do and the hard work that it takes necessary. And really, if you can do those three things, that, you know, you know, your dream can possibly come true, and that, you know, you have a chance to achieve and have some success down the road. So, you know, it's just willing to, you know, like find something you love and, you know, just work hard towards your dream. And I think in the autism community, you know, they see it as a symbol of hope, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that, you know, just because you have autism doesn't mean you can't accomplish great things in this world, you know? And so, you know, I mean, we're coming in, we're, you know, just, you know, you just can't ever give up no matter what you have, you know, and you just gotta keep pushing forward.
Oh, absolutely. It's such an important, that's such an important message to get out to people. And I mean, that's, you know, obviously one of the things that we're trying to do here in our own little tiny special way is just, you know, just keep having these conversations. And anyone, I mean, there's kind of like two I've sort of discovered in this podcast, there's kind of like two streams that happen that are both really neat. And the one is, we get messages all the time from autistic people saying that, hey, we appreciate hearing these conversations and hearing other people's stories because we can relate, and it's like getting our stories out there. And then we get also messages from people, neurotypical people, saying, hey, that we're really appreciating this podcast because you're giving us a little insight into what it's like being autistic. And, you know, I've gotten several messages from people who might have like an autistic friend or family member or something. I got one a month or so ago from this woman who she's like in her maybe late 20s or 30 and has a brother who's in his early 20s, who's autistic. And she's a huge part of his support, you know. And she messaged me and just said, you know, I've listened to a bunch of these episodes and it's like the stuff you're describing is exactly like my brother. And it's really helping me understand how he thinks and how I can relate to him and how I can help him. And I think that's, you know, it's just been really gratifying to be getting those kind of messages from people. And this is like, I mean, talking to you is so cool. Like, I just hope there's people that can be like, holy crap, this guy's like racing cars going like 800 miles an hour. And it's like, that's possible. Like, oh my God, that's amazing. You know? Cause it is all possible. It's like, you know, there's no limits on this stuff.
Yeah, definitely. You know, in life, you know, not everything is perfect. There's always some challenges that you have to face down the road. And, you know, autism is one of them. You know, early stages, you're going to have challenges. And it's just a matter of how you're going to overcome it. How are you going to approach it? You know, are you going to let it get in the way? Or are you going to find a way to break those barriers that autism can possess? And, you know, just try to find the person that you want to be and never let autism come into mind. And, you know, have that confidence that, hey, you know, I can do this certain thing, you know, like I'm not worried about how other people view me or, you know, what they think about me. You know, I'm more worried about, well, what do I want to be? What is it going to take to get to where I want to be?
Yeah. And that's another thing too. It's like we, something that I hope we can, you know, slowly get across is like being autistic is like part of who we are. It's a big part of who we are, but it's not the entirety of who we are. And like, you know, I might be autistic, but I still like have all the same complexities and foibles and things that any normal person does. Like I could still be a grumpy asshole some days and be a really, you know, like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's a human element people can sometimes forget where they sort of just view somebody as autistic and think they only think about them as in terms of autism. But it's like, well, no, I just, you know, like we all, you know, we're still just humans and we have the same kind of fears and dreams and desires and hopes and all the same stuff. It's just like the way we experience the world is a little bit different, but inside, like we're still, you know, we have flaws. We have all that other good stuff. It's like, you know, we're not trying to say we're perfect or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, everyone is different in their own way, but sometimes they can be different in their own unique way. You know, I mean, like you said, you know, I mean, us as autistic, we may be different. We may see the world a different way than, you know, others without autism may not have. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're still human beings. You know, we're not the most perfect people in the world, you know, but like, you know, we're human beings, you know, that understand that, you know, not everything's perfect and that, you know, sometimes we got to face challenges like other people do and find a way to overcome it. And, you know, I mean, that's just the main thing, you know, and that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, it's true. It's like, I'm sitting here looking at you, I'm talking to you and I see, I mean, excuse me for saying this because I'm quite a bit older than you, but like, I see this kid who is inspiring the hell out of me. Who's like, just, you got this awesome smile. You're smart. You love what you do. You're living this awesome life. And I, aside from being autistic, I also have these thoughts of like, how are you juggling like school and family and racing on weekends and like having this career and also like just being like, you're 20 now, but you just came out like being a teenager, like being young, like having a life, having fun with friends, having, you know, dating, like all these things. I'm just like, it's, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it's like, I'm looking at you like, just, you, how do you,
he's so balanced. He's very balanced individual.
I mean, aside from being autistic, you just have to, like, racing is a thing you have to balance in a whole full life of being a young person, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. 'Cause like, with racing, you see a lot of race car drivers, you know, the interesting fact about it is that most race car drivers like don't usually go to college. Now they may graduate in high school, but like they know that, you know, the earliest they can get in the racing, you know, the more opportunities they get.
Yeah. So
sometimes they may want to skip the college part and just want to go to racing right away, you know, but the important thing is that you don't know how long you're going to be doing racing for, you know, like us race car drivers, we want to be doing it for as long as we possibly can, whether it's like 15 to 20 years, but we know it may not always be possible. So to me, I try to, you know, to me, I felt that it was important to just try to get a college education. You know, one day, you know, get a degree. So that way, you know, when you know, it's time to hang up the helmet or the steering wheel that, you know, I can maybe use that kind of college degree to find other things that I think I'm good at.
Yeah.
And, you know, just try to look for opportunities there, you know, because, you know, not every day is the end of the world, you know, life goes on and, you know, sometimes you love a certain thing and, you know, you may not do it for a long time or you may not like it. And, you know, you gotta try and find something else to do, you know, which is why, you know, for me, I try to, you know, do college, but also do racing. And, you know, you're right. It is kind of, it can be a challenge just from, you know, where like racing starts in the beginning of the year, like February, January to then like in November, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, it's worked out pretty well, you know, I mean, especially with college, you know, not all classes are in person, you know, there's classes that I can find that, you know, I can do them online and I don't have to worry about going to class, you know? I mean, the only thing I would need to worry about is just make sure I don't forget my laptop and just carry it with me wherever I go. So I don't miss any homework or anything. You know? So I felt like from the beginning, it would be a little bit of a chuckling app, but right now, not really. I'm able to kind of manage it pretty well.
That's awesome. I'm just picturing you like at the racetrack, like in between, you know, like you've just sitting there like in your racing suit with your laptop. Like, I'm just going to bang out some homework right now and then, you know, put my helmet on a little while and get out there.
I just got like a quick homework that's got five questions. Don't worry. It'll take me 5 minutes and then I'll get back in a race car. That's
amazing, dude. Do the oil change and I'll get this assignment done.
Right, exactly.
Does your, like when you go traveling to other tracks and stuff, do your family come with you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think out of my family, my dad is the one that's gone to every track that I went to, you know, but then there's some races where, you know, my mom and maybe my grandparents, you know, they have the time to travel, whether it's short or long, you know, they like to come out and, you know, support me, but you know, they, you know, with some racetracks, some races I get into, you know, they're always broadcasts on television, whether it's on NBC Sports or Fox Sports One or Fox, you know, like, you know, if there's ever a race I'm into that I know that everybody's going to be able to watch and even my own family can be able to watch, you know, they'll probably watch it on TV. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, you know, and they like, my family can be a little bit nervous, a little bit scared sometimes. I mean, like, again, I'm out there on the racetrack with other cars going 180, 190 miles an hour. They don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll get into a crash, which hopefully that'll never happen. You know, I expect to start on the green flag and then get to that start finish line and check a flag.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's all they're hoping for. But, you know, they're at the end of the day, you know, they're out there, you know, they know this is something I love to do and that, you know, again, they're just continuing to support me, you know, not only off the track, but on the track as well, you know, just being, you know, a cheerleader of mine, you could say. Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty fun, you know, just to, you know, have family involved. That's
for sure.
Oh, that's who's a better driver, your mom or your dad?
I mean,
you don't have to answer this question.
I mean, I would be honest. I mean, they're not bad drivers, you know. I mean, they do drive safe, that's for sure. But you know, I guess like, you know, they would prefer me, you know, to drive for them, you know, and they being the passenger seat, knowing like, you know, I drive everywhere I go on the racetrack and then even on the road, you know, like for me on the road, I always try to be careful knowing that on the road, there's always some limits. There's always a speed limit. There's always traffic lights. And I try to remind myself, this is no racetrack. I can't drive 180, 190 miles an hour wherever I go. I got to drive 70. I got to drive 45. Like, I got to take it slow. And I gotta be careful out there, you know.
Yeah. So, you just secured sponsorship for 20 years, right there, with that statement.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, I mean, at least being a professional race car driver, you know, I always know that I have a responsibility of what I'm doing off the track, and especially when I'm driving on the road, making sure I don't get a speeding ticket or making sure I don't go out there driving recklessly. I mean, that's always important as well, you know, because if anything ever came on social media, if I ever did something wrong and it's got to show up on the newspaper or on the TV coverage or social media, then, you know, I know I'm in trouble. So, you know, I always try to be careful when I'm on the road.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of interesting. I never thought about that aspect of it, that you have to being doing what you do, you have to be conscious of your image and your like how you would be perceived if something would. I mean, God, I think back to when I was 20 and man, like, I'm so glad social media didn't exist because, if there was a record of everything I was doing, it would not be good.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think.
Stay tuned. That's a future episode.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, really, you just have to be, you know, self-aware. You got to understand what you're getting themselves into, you know, and. Yeah. With being a race car driver and, you know, people drive on the road all the time. Now I understand that is my image, that I'm a professional race car driver.
Yeah.
Anything that I do on the road, that I have to be careful not to do things that, you know, anybody else would do, you know,
like,
I mean, you know, I can't drink and drive, you know, I can't be speeding. I can't do all these reckless things. You know, I got to show that, you know, that not only that I can go fast on the racetrack, that, but I can also be responsible on the track as well, you know, and I got a certain responsibility for that, you know, so it's just something, you know, you just gotta keep in mind, you know, when you try to do certain things and not get yourself into so much trouble.
I love, like, hey, after this COVID thing is you know, calms down a little, we're not that far away, so Drew, we'll have to drive down to Michigan sometime. We'll keep track of we'll follow your social media and see when you're racing and stuff. And it'd be really fun to come down and watch you race sometime. Or if you ever end up doing any races up in Ontario, Canada again, you know, we'd love to come
see
you.
We'll come support.
Be so fun. Have you ever been to a car race, Drew?
Like F1 when I was a kid, but it's on my list. Like, it needs to happen soon.
Right. Well, we'll go this summer. I'll take you somewhere, but that's awesome.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's all good. Drew, do you got any thing you want to ask Armani about right now?
Well, I just, like, I noticed a parallel. As much as Ryan says, you know, we have 8 viewers, we have more than that. But I noticed, like, in the same way that Ryan is becoming sort of like an ambassador within the autistic community, it seems like you are, like, happy to you know, embrace that ambassador role. I think it's just so fabulous.
Yeah, thank you. You know, and I think it kind of came over time where, you know, like, as I was moving up in the race scene, that, you know, we knew that we needed to have some sort of platform, you know, and we need to have some sort of cause to where we could use my race scene to help give back to the community. And, you know, with me being autism, like being autistic and knowing that there's so many individuals, families, or, you know, or somewhat, you know, that have been impacted by autism, that, you know, we just needed to create something to where, you know, we're kind of helping to, you know, increase awareness and inclusion for autism, you know, like, kind of recognize those people, give them that sort of hope, you know, something to lift up their spirits to where, you know, like, with autism, you know, they don't have to give up on themselves, you know, like, they know that certain things are possible and that, you know, whatever dream or something that they really enjoy in life, you know, if that's what you want to do, go for it, you know? So,
yeah.
it's not so much, you know, with me wanting to race, because that's something that I love to do, you know, like I do the mm-hmm. racing just to kind of, you know, help give people with autism the inspiration to, yeah. you know, want to find something that they enjoy to do as well. And so, you know, yeah. we just felt like that was something important to, you know, do. And, you know, I wanted to try and be, you know, the face of those people that, you know, I can yeah. relate with, you know, and just give them a reason why, you know, like autism is not such a bad thing, and that you can use it more as a strength instead yeah. of a weakness.
Yeah.
Was there like any hesitancy at all? Was there any, like, I don't know if the, like, was there any resistance, or were you just like, I have to do this?
No, I don't think there was much resistance. I mean, it's just, we kind of thought about it. Like, I talked with it with my family, and, you know, we kind of all came to the agreement that, you know, this is something that, you know, would, like, you know, bring out great exposure, you know, like if yeah. we can, like, use the platform of autism and just sort of, you know, spread that message yeah. all the way around, you know, towards, you know, on track and off the track, you know, that we can do much more big things than what we're doing right now, yeah. you know, with my career racing. And so, you know,
that's so good, man.
It wasn't so much resistance. It just something that we felt like it was necessary for us to do.
Yeah. And I think that that's so positive and kind of parallels what I was saying earlier. I think it's so positive in that I think you can be a symbol for autistic people, especially like kids or something growing up, to go, oh wow, like this guy's doing it, that's awesome. And you can also be you know, demonstrate to neurotypical people not to assume that you can't do what you're doing, or that anyone can't do something because they're autistic. It's like, you know, oh, this guy's out here, he's competing, he's going as fast as everyone else, like he's doing it. It's like, hopefully that'll help, you know, with some misconceptions out there in the world about, you know, do you, in all that being said, do you feel any pressure to like represent the autistic community, or do you just kind of feel like, hey, I'm just me doing what I do?
I wouldn't say there's a lot of too much pressure, you know. I mean, I think it's just, you know, really, you know, me just being me and just yeah. continuing to spread the message of autism, you know, yeah. and explain to them why it's not such a bad thing, and that you can do amazing things in life, you know, if you go out and yeah. try and you believe yeah. in yourself and, you know, stay encouraged. I mean, I just think really, you know, it's just important for us to, you know, really, you know, increase the awareness and just to have people recognize, you know, where some people may see us as quirky or weird just because of what people think autism is, you know, yeah. but really it's more important to give them a direct knowledge of what autism is, you know, just help yeah. them understand there may be weaknesses, but there are also strengths to autism as well. And that, you know, we may be more different than what people see us in, but at the yeah. end of the day, you know, I mean, we have our life's challenges, you know, and yeah. it's only up to us to, you know, not let autism get in our way, and yeah. you know, just to overcome those challenges, break those barriers, and just decide what you really want to be and what you really want to do, you know, like yeah. it's not the end of the world, you know. I mean, with kids that may be impacted with autism, you know, they have a long life ahead of them, you know, yeah. and really, like, we just want to, like, just give them just a symbol of hope, you know, yeah. just to keep pushing forward and to never giving up. And, you know, whatever it is that they enjoy and something that they wanted to growing up, you know, go for that yeah. dream. It is possible, you know, yeah. like I said before, you know, I mean, if you put in the time, the commitment, the hard work and what you love to do, you know, it is possible. You know, it's just a matter of you taking that initiative just to say, nope. I mean, I know, like, autism, you know, it's not something that, you know, I wish to happen, but I know it's something I'm going to live through the rest of my life. And, you know, I'm going to have to find a way to overcome it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, everybody has challenges. And, you know, at the end of the day, we just need to not let those challenges get in our way, and just figure out how to beat it, and open ourselves up to what we really want to be in this world.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Magic pill question.
Real quick. You rule, man. I love you. You're so awesome. What were you saying, Drew?
I think it's just quick magic pill question. Do you want to phrase it? You're better at it.
Oh yeah. We ask everybody this. The magic pill question is, if there was a magic pill you could take and you could wake up tomorrow and not be autistic, would you take the magic pill?
As much as I think about what autism is, as much as I think I would want to, I really don't. I really kind of enjoy being who I am, because it's just something that you just don't see a lot. Not everybody has autism, and it's something unique. It's something special, and like when I look at what I've done in my life and where I am now, I'm kind of glad that, I have autism and the type of impact I'm willing to help get back to others like me. I definitely don't wish to try and maybe take something and try to completely wash it away, because I think we may not have, if I didn't have autism, I think my life would be totally different. I wouldn't be like where I am today. I'm just proud to be autism. I'm proud of the things that I've accomplished and wanted to continue to accomplish. And I'm proud of myself, of the challenges that I was able to face early on, just having that early diagnosis and having, the opportunities to where, the things that I struggled with before, that I'm able to not let those struggles, get in my way, and that, I've broken those barriers, and right now, I'm happy with how I am today. I'm happy to have autism.
Yeah, man, you literally just sent, like, I just got chills. I was just
seriously, same thing. I'm like, man, what number are you, Armani?
Oh yeah, good question.
That's a good question. let's see. I've drove a variety of numbers. Like I've driven number 4, I've driven number 28, 97, 34, 12, 01. And I don't really know. I mean, I think when it comes time to where, I can find a home in a race team where I'm in a same number every time, then, maybe it'll make things easier. But I would say for now, I'm number 12, but it could 12. Be different. I don't know.
Hey, whatever number you wear, we are going to cheer that number in that car on.
Yeah,
for sure.
So go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I'll make sure, whatever races I'm going to compete in, that will remind people what my actual car number is going to be, so that way
they can see you on the track.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Just another bit of adversity you have to deal with on the track, right? Not knowing your number.
Absolutely.
So Armani, where anyone who's listening to this, watching this, that wants to find out more about you, where can they find you online?
So I got my own website. People can go to it. It's www.teamarmaniracing.com. It shows more about our foundation with Race for Autism and what our mission is and what we're trying to do. There's even a bio that, if you want to learn about me, about my early life and, where I am now, there is there, you can look at certain social media platforms that I have. Like I got Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, it's all at Team Armani Racing, if you want to follow me there. And, also, we'll be able to put a schedule up of what races I'm going to be, so that way everybody can tune in. So, you would probably learn more from, where I am on social media with Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And then also, check out my website, teamarmaniracing.com, and, you can learn more about me. And
it's a slick website. It's a slick website. And whoever did that did a good job on that website, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh man, it's been such a pleasure talking to you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been super exciting for me to get to, virtually meet you. And Dude, I just looking at you and I just think, man, you have the brightest future. It's so cool. I just think like what you've already done is amazing to me. And like, I just feel like we're going to be hearing your name a lot and for a long time. It's really awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, and I appreciate you guys having me on. Like, this was a blast. You know, I mean, conversations like these is what I really enjoy. You know, whenever people come up to me wanting to talk about racing or wanting to talk about autism and what they have to go through, because, you know, I kind of think of myself of what I had to go through in their shoes, you know, and I want to be able to give them a helping hand. So that way, you know, they can sort of face that adversity head on. So, you know, like conversation like what we had today is, you know, what I truly enjoy, and, you know, hopefully many more will come.
That's awesome, man.
You're in the Life Autistic family now. So if you ever need to lean on us, please don't hesitate. On air or off the air, you always have us here, bro.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Really appreciate it, man.
And I got one last quick question.
Okay.
When you're like, you know, you're done racing, you're done your school stuff, you just need to blow off some steam and have some fun, what's your go-to? What do you do when you just need to like let loose and have some fun?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I mean, I would say, you know, I kind of like watching movies. Like every now and then, you know, that whether it's on TV or whether I go to movie theater, and they always show the previews. You know, whenever a cool movie comes on, you know, I always make sure that, you know, whenever that comes in theaters, we need to go see that movie. Yeah. So like, nice. I really enjoy watching movies. I'm kind of more into like the action type of movies where certain actors do certain stunts. It's just so cool how they do it. You know, I like to kind of take warm, sunny vacations, you know, sometimes, you know, be out of country and, you know, kind of discover the world, discover their culture and the things that they do, you know, and yeah, I mean, I think those are kind of the two main things, you know, something to where I can kind of relax and kind of enjoy myself when, you know, I have nothing really important to do and that, you know, all I can do is just, you know, have a good time and have some fun, you know, because we need a little bit of that in life.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely.
True that.
Right on. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much. This has been a really awesome conversation. I appreciate it. And yeah, hopefully we'll do a follow-up and do a part two one of these days.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a blast.
Awesome. Thanks, man. So we'll anyone who's listening, check out teamarmaniracing.com. You can find out more and follow him on social media. And look for him on the future at a podium near you, spraying champagne all over the place.
Congratulations on all your successes and everything you're doing for the community, Armani.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Right on. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later, guys. Right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.